Well, we're going to move regions again and head to Africa, and this time we're going to be looking at Ebola hemorrhagic fever. Dr. Steve Asofsky is going to be moderating this session, and Steve is a Wildlife Conservation Society leader. He's our senior policy advisor in wildlife health. Some of his background: he was a wildlife veterinary officer for the Botswana Department of Wildlife and National Parks. He's also the director of animal services at the Fossil Rim Wildlife Center in Texas. He was director of field support for species programs in Asia and Africa for the World Wildlife Fund for a number of years, as well as he was an American Association for Advancement of Sciences and Diplomacy Fellow under their biodiversity program initiative for USAID. And on a more personal note, both Steve Asofsky and Bill Karish have really been guiding principles in our effort here to put this conference on, and I owe them a great debt of gratitude for all the efforts that they have done. So with that, Steve.
Okay, well, this next session is about Ebola. We're going to move on to Africa now. I think we've got an incredible panel. And I'd like to introduce our first speaker. It's Dr. Pierre Formanty from the World Health Organization, the Emerging and Dangerous Pathogens team. Dr. Formanty has been working with WHO since January of 96, and he's currently the WHO focal point and coordinator for a wide range of critically important diseases, including Ebola, Marburg, Rift Valley fever, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, Nipah, and monkeypox. He's an epidemiologist specializing in public health, and also a medical virologist, focusing specifically on the viral hemorrhagic fevers. He has more than 15 years' experience in tropical animal pathology and tropical medicine, and we're really honored to have him here to start off the Ebola session.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the organizer for inviting me here today in New York and presenting this talk on Ebola virus. I'm going to talk about Ebola virus. I will give you a brief introduction on the disease and the virus, and then explain to you our work in WHO with our partner during our work response. And last but not the least, I will show you what are the challenges and the perspective in terms of Ebola for the future. Here you have a picture of Nzara. Nzara is a place where began the very first outbreak of Ebola in the 1976. And already the world and the scientific community learn a lot on Ebola at this time. You have, for example, on this epicurve, the cases in Maridi, who was a big town, and the cases in Nzara. And in Nzara, it was what we call now a rural outbreak of Ebola. And when this rural outbreak reached Maridi, was the place for an hospital, we have a mesenchymal outbreak of Ebola, would ring the bell in the capital Khartoum, and then have an investigation of this outbreak. And I will come back to this later. Ebola virus is a filovirus, and we have four distinct Ebola strains: Zaire, Sudan, Côte d'Ivoire, and Western. The reservoir is still unknown, despite extensive investigation. There is no specific treatment and no vaccine. And today, we are giving supportive treatment, rehydration, and intensive care when we can to people who suffer the disease. The transmission is done by direct or indirect contact with skin and mucous membrane or body fluid of infected patient. Also, the transmission occurs when people like hunters find animal dead in the forest. Could be chimpanzees, but also gorilla, monkey, or forest antelope. The amplification for Ebola is likely to occur in hospital settings, within the healthcare workers, or with inpatient or caregiver. And the amplification also occurs within the community during the care to the sick patient or during the funerals. So it's Ebola virus hemorrhagic fever. It's an hemorrhagic fever, so it begins with fever and then rapidly evolve with diarrhea and vomiting, severe sore throat, and later the hemorrhagic scene appears. And the case fatality ratio is between 50 and 80. The important thing to point out here is the infectivity of the person, who is very low at the beginning of the disease and very high at the end of the disease. And if the person is going to die at day 8, day 9, you can even find the virus in the skin and the sweat. And at this time, people doing the during the funeral ceremony, when they clean the body, they get infected just cleaning the body. The diagnostic is done by serology or virus detection. I will go briefly on this one just to show you that, in fact, for the diagnostic, there is very few labs in the world able to do the diagnostic. And also, less than that, very few also able to produce region to do the diagnostic for Ebola. Here is an hypothetic symptomatic transmission of Ebola virus. So far, what we know from all the studies done in Gabon, Congo, and Côte d'Ivoire, so we have the population here who acquire the disease most of the time when finding dead animals in the forest. We know as well that, for example, in Ivory Coast, we have chimpanzees getting infected when killing sick monkeys. And because we have found some of Megatherium, which is fruit bats, positive by antibodies, we believe that there is probably an amplification and dissemination role that are playing this animal. But the true reservoir is still today unknown. But just this cycle here allow us to do prevention and health education campaign. Shortly as well, today the only country where we have been able to isolate the virus are Gabon, Congo, DRC, Uganda, Sudan, and Côte d'Ivoire. There is other countries in Central Africa, like Cameroon or Central African Republic or Nigeria, where you can find positive people by antibodies, but we still don't know what these positive antibodies means in terms of if it's a cross-reaction or if it's a true people who have been exposed to Ebola virus in Africa. So now I will go quickly to the lesson learned during the recent outbreak of Ebola in Africa, and here is a picture of Yambuku in 1976. So why are we responding to outbreak today? If we have a first case and a late detection and a delayed response, our opportunity for control are very small. But if we are able to have an early detection, a rapid response, then we can have a lot of opportunity for control. And we are able to reduce human suffering, contain international spread, and minimize the impact on travel and trade. But this, a single institution has not the capacity to do it alone. We are in WHO. In fact, our challenge is to bring partners together to focus global resources on the problem, to stop the outbreak. And very often during our operations, we work with NGOs like NSF, for example, or the Red Cross, but we work also with other UN agencies, UNDP, UNICEF, and others. And for other diseases, not only Ebola, we can work also with OIE and FAO, for example. Strategy for controlling Ebola outbreak. The strategy is quite simple, but should be keep in mind that the first thing is to establish coordination mechanism for response at the very high level. And then one of the first tools that we have is inform the public and do health education to promote practices that restrict the transmission. We are also establishing most of the time isolation ward to admit cases and reserve cases, and also we are in charge of the funerals. And this last year we have worked a lot on this, I mean, to organizing safe funeral, but also funeral that allow the process of mourning in the population. Also, one of the tasks of our teams is to establish active surveillance system to identify cases and follow the contact. And more and more now, we develop a psychological support for the patient, the family, and the healthcare workers in the post-epidemic process. And this strategy also can be shown here with these five big boxes. data coordinate all together. I have had also one box for the media because we need to have relationship with the media, and we need also to have people working on the environment, for example, looking for the reservoir of Ebola or other important issues regarding the environment. In terms of coordination, it's important that the Ministry of Health take the leadership of the response. This was the case during the outbreak of Ebola in Congo, where we have a very strong leadership of the Ministry of Health. It was not the case during the last outbreak in South Sudan, because we were in a country without any official, because you know there is a civil war in South Sudan, so it was much more difficult. But most of the time, we really built everything on strong local leadership. And then we elaborate with them detailed action plan to look for funds, because all these operations are very costly. Also, which is very important for us during our break response, is the coordination meeting that we have every morning with all the team involved. Sorry, the team from the WHO, but also the other team from other NGOs and other partners at the national and international level. Here you have some pictures, for example, here, the Ministry of Health from Congo, who was scared during all the outbreak response in Congo, and he goes to the press, he gives all the information that we have from the field to the press. He was a great communicator, and this was very important and key for us to raise funds, but also to avoid a panic in a big capital like Brazzaville. And here we have some pictures of, for example, here coordination meeting every morning, and here is the meeting of the international team at night. Which is important also in terms of outbreak response will be the epidemiology and surveillance. So the job of the surveillance team will be to put in place an active investigation and registration of cases, to look also for contact and deaths in the country. This work, in fact, help us to have detailed line listing of the cases and the contact, and also to provide this information daily to the Ministry of Health. There is two kinds of outbreak for Ebola. Today we know that we have outbreak in rural areas, like for Yambuku, Nzara, Tandala, or Gabon and Congo, or Yambio this year. And we have also outbreak in urban areas. In rural areas, in fact, we have several virus introduction from the wildlife. So you can have an outbreak in one village or one town, and when you are looking for the cases or the contact, you have to be careful with other villages around, because the outbreak in the wildlife continue and you can have other introduction in the population. And if you want to control the outbreak, you need to be aware of that. You see also that there is if we take all the outbreak and we divide by the number of introduction, the outbreak is very small, 24 cases per outbreak, and only a few healthcare workers. So it's very difficult, in fact, for the surveillance system, for the Ministry of Health, to detect this outbreak. And this is why we work a lot with the people in charge of conservation. And when they detect outbreak of animal disease, die-off of gorilla, die-off of chimpanzee, they alert WHO, they alert the Ministry of Health, so that we can begin a campaign of health education in the villages. Also, an important thing to show here is that the hunters are the cases at the beginning of the Ebola outbreak, and then later their mother, because their mother are in charge of the funerals, and then they get infected when they organize the funerals of their son. And then the outbreak at the end, if the outbreak lasts in rural area, you have an outbreak more in human and less in men. Also, traditional healers play an amplification role during this outbreak, and we contact them very often to avoid this kind of amplification role. The transmission mechanism is most of the time the funeral, and we have a lot of problem with the community mobilization. Here is the example of the Kele outbreak last year, and you see that in fact in December already people working in the Ozala National Park in Congo were alerting us of die-off of gorilla between Mbomo and Kele, and four gorillas that were found dead in the field were turned to be positive for Ebola. And then we send a team to do health education, to do social mobilization, but at this time people did not listen to us, and the outbreak began, and it's only end of January that we have cases coming to Mbomo and Kele Hospital, and then we organize an outbreak response. In urban setting, the situation is basically the same in terms of number. You see around 1,000 cases. But in rural, in urban settings, you have one single virus introduction in the community. So it's much more easy to control. You just have to stop the transmission chain. And you see that these outbreaks are very important. And so, and in terms of number of healthcare workers also, they, I would say, hampered a lot the health system in all these towns where Ebola reached. Like in Maridi in 76, Okikwit, Ogulu, that most of you knows. The good things on urban setting is that the community mobilization is much more easy compared to rural area, so you will succeed much more rapidly. For example, here is Kikwit. After the implementation in the hospital of the barrier nursing techniques, you see that the outbreak stops quite rapidly. Health education and social mobilization for me and for the team I'm working with is the only effective weapon today for Ebola. The communication is key. And for example, in Congo, we have used a lot radio and TV to inform the population, not only in the field but also in the capital, about Ebola, how Ebola is transmitted and so on. I just want to mention here, for example, the Ministry of Health buying 400 radios and provide, plus the battery of course, and providing free this radio to the villages where the Ebola outbreak occurred in the province of Cuvette, and just to be sure that the messages that were given in the radio in the capital were reaching the population in this very remote area. Here you have example of posters that have been developed in Congo with a local artist. And in fact, these have been used as well during the Yambio outbreak this year because we have this, of course, in JPEG file, and we are able to use the same drawings in the South Sudan. We just translate in English and then local languages, and the same things were used. So it was a bit of, I would say, solidarity between African countries through the mechanism of the WHO response. And here you have also people from the capital in Brazzaville who have sent food to the region by solidarity because people are afraid to go in the forest to look for food. Case management is also a critical issue when you respond to an outbreak of Ebola. You need to create an isolation facility but also to be sure that your patients are safely transported to the hospital. You need also to train for PPE all your personnel working with you in the hospital. You implement standard treatment protocol for patient care. And what we are doing and what we are doing more and more is to provide free medicine but also free food to all the patients who are admitted in the ward for Ebola. We also put in place what we call case management at home for suspect cases. It's not a good policy in terms of public health, but it's for some families that do not want to bring their son or their daughter or the father to the hospital. It's a way to continue to have communication with this family and not to have the epidemic going underground. Here, just to show you some pictures taken during the Gulu outbreak on how to dress with PPE. Funeral is also a big issue in Central Africa and also in East Africa. We have all to remind that funeral is a key moment in the time of somebody in this area. And just a safe burial is not enough for the family. And we have really to treat this burial as a real funeral ceremony, respecting the death to allow the process of mourning for all the family. Some teams have been tempted to just organize safe burial, but we have reports, for example, in Gabon, of family going at night and digging out the bodies to do a normal funeral ceremony. So we have put a lot of effort to go and to, for example, here is a person dying with Ebola, and we have organized all the funeral ceremony wearing PPEs. And doing that, we ensure that the outbreak is not going uncontrolled and underground. Also, important issues are raised in terms of security and logistics, but I will go fast on this one to come to the challenge and the perspective. The perspective are not very good because, as you know, the outbreak in the wild continue, and this last month we have a report still of die-off of gorilla in this area. So it seems that the outbreak, let's say in the wild, continue to go east and probably north. Here there is a big town called Hueso. So we have to continue to be vigilant. And in terms of surveillance, we need to really join the human and animal surveillance in an interdisciplinary working partnership with all vet services, Ministry of Agriculture, but also the National Park, the NGOs working in public health, but also working in conservation. We are also working with NASA to try to see if we can develop, like we have done for Rivale fever, an early warning system based on environmental and climatic events. And also we are working with UECN, FAO and OIE to see how we can better regulate wildlife market at international level. For the laboratory, we are working on developing field tests for new serologic and biological field tests. And this will probably also benefit the wildlife conservation people. We also field test non-invasive method of diagnostic. Here is it during the MBOMO. And this also will benefit the surveillance in animal population. And we push to develop national laboratory capacity so that we have more and more information on what is happening in the field, because there is increasing now delays when people find a dead animal and want to send sample for confirmation. You have seen at the beginning of my talk how many few laboratories are really working on Ebola diagnostic. In terms of therapeutic and vaccine, since 1 year now, we have had a lot of news. There is new therapeutics and new vaccine available and who are going to be available in the next months. Already, we have developed, together with Congo, a joint effort to try to see if we have a new outbreak, try some of these therapeutics. So we also would like to analyze with medical anthropologists the impact or problem linked with the implementation of the new treatment or this vaccine in the future. And last but not the least, we are pushing and we are developing a big program for social mobilization and behavioral change with a network of medical anthropologists specialized in outbreak response. These people have worked with us during the Ebola outbreak, but now we are bringing them in the loop also for the SARS and the avian flu and other problems like Congo Crimea hemorrhagic fever in Central Asian republics. But I just want to thank you again for your attention.